Yeah. Hey. Thank you all for tuning into the podcast. Anything that you want, no, we got that. Sports, we got that. Joke, we got that. And we just getting started, so don't turn me down, stop that. From LA all the way to the A. Maddie and Cohen got so many things to say. Switching up the topic quick as I switch up the flow. So make sure you pay attention. Okay, ready, here we go. It's the Daily Degenerate, Daily Degenerate. Welcome to the Daily Degenerate, Daily Degenerate, Daily Degenerate. Welcome to the Daily Degenerate, Daily Degenerate, Daily Degenerate. Welcome to the Daily Degenerate, Daily Degenerate, Daily Degenerate. Welcome to the Daily Degenerate.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to an extremely important and jam-packed episode of the Daily Degenerate Podcast. This is episode 8 of the 32 Teams in 32 Episodes podcast series. We are previewing the season of the Detroit Lions, the Motown Lions. I am joined via FaceTime with three very handsome gentlemen. We got Connor, Rud Dog, and Big Z from the what Drinking up? The Blue Kool-Aid podcast. Fellas, what's good?
Hello. How's it going?
We're good, man. Good to be here.
Yeah, we're getting creative with COVID-19 with a four-person FaceTime right now. The Lions have made a lot of moves in the offseason, not just in the draft, but in free agency as well. Took a few of my Falcons players. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Last season, you started the season with a tie, won two straight. So a pretty quick start by y'all standards. What was the good connotation behind that good start?
Well, I think our offense, we just switched offensive coordinators from Jim Bob Cooter, maybe the best name in
the best football in the NFL. Ever.
Yeah, to Daryl Bevel, who I think was a little bit better at playing the Matt Stafford strengths. They got a little bit more comfortable with the deep ball. They tried to get the run game going to limited success week to week, but I also thought the team looked a lot more disciplined and they were playing a lot of close games. Early in the season, I think they found a lot of success managing those close games, which unfortunately I thought was also their doom later, but I would say that would be the biggest factor, and I think Stafford had maybe his best season with the Lions until he got hurt. That was also another big factor, I think, in the early success of the season.
Rud Dog, how deafening were these injuries? How much did injuries play a factor in last season?
On the defensive side of the ball, it was huge. I mean, obviously Stafford, but yeah. That's the big one. That's the most obvious one. But the defensive side, we had no interior pass rush because we were really relying on Deshaun Han and Mike Daniels to really provide that pressure and collapse the pocket. And both guys only had a handful of snaps all season. And you could see the difference when they were on the field. And it resulted in the Lions turning into the most conservative anti-pass rush defense I think I've ever seen, rushing three guys most of the time. We were the lowest blitzing team in the NFL, so it was it really hurt.
If you guys were number 32, I know who was number 31. My Atlanta Falcons. We are one of the most conservative defenses that I know, and I feel like we're on the same path, rushing three guys, not generating pressure, and it really shows whenever guys, quarterbacks especially, can pick your defense apart and just march up and down the field whenever they want to. So we talked a little bit about the Matt Stafford injury, Rud Dog. In the bullpen, you guys said that the Detroit media said that he is okay, cleared to play. He is 100% recovered from that back injury last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we've heard. He seems pretty confident, and it seems like the front office is pretty confident in his ability to return as well.
Good. That's good because Matt Stafford, for better or for worse, I think is the face of the offense for the Detroit Lions. He rolls out of bed with 4,000 yards every year if he can play all 16 games. I think Matt Stafford is 1,000% and is not even close to the X factor of the Detroit Lions offense. Big Z, would you agree with that statement?
Oh, 100%. We saw what happened last year when Matt Stafford was hurt. It was a who's who of quarterbacks coming in.
Who was the kid on Thanksgiving who had the receiving touchdown? Blau?
David Blau is the one that threw
from Purdue.
Yeah, there you go. The Thanksgiving game was pretty entertaining, for better or for worse.
Well, they did keep it close. Like, I mean, the Lions last year kept all their games close, like Connor was saying earlier. Early in the season, they won some of those close ones, and then I think only two games weren't decided by 10 points or decided by one score or less. So 14 of the 16 games they played were decided by one score or less last year. Unfortunately, yeah, we're on the unfortunate side of most of those. But there's a lot of statisticians out there that say when you lose a lot of those games the year before, the luck tends to regress towards the mean. So I think the Lions have that to look forward to, at least statistically speaking.
Statistically. So we are in Matt Patricia's third year as the Detroit Lions head coach.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Year three. This is a big one.
So you said it's the big one. Is before I ask you about the hot seat, how do you feel personally about Matt Patricia? Do you think it's would you like to have him as your head coach in the future?
I mean, at this point, it's sort of a mixed feeling. It's hard not to be when you've had two, you know, terrible seasons. But I think he's still been selling this vision of a culture and a winning culture that we haven't had in our city for a long time, our team for a long time. And I'm still willing to play this out. We had some bad eggs on the roster the last few years, and I think he's finally got rid of those guys. And this is his... I mean, you've been seeing these guys. They're coming out on social media. Darius Slay and then Quandre Diggs and Snacks Harrison. These guys are airing out the dirty laundry from the franchise now. And I don't think they realize how it's making them look, honestly. I mean, they're painting an ugly picture of Patricia a little bit, but some of that seems more like, oh, boo-hoo, you're a grown man, suck it up type things. And they were talking about not paying attention in the film room and dicking around at practice. And so, I mean, and it showed on the field. They were making mistakes, and our defense sucked. So
so the way that I feel about Matt Patricia, I don't have any strong feelings towards him either way or the other. I feel like anybody who comes with that from that Bill Belichick system – deserves a few years to kind of get their system in place. Do you guys kind of see any resemblances between what he does and what Bill Belichick and the Patriots do in terms of roster personnel?
Definitely. I think that same type of personnel, like those kind of quiet, like keep your head down, play hard types. They seem to not mind being cheap on the line sometimes. And, I think those big personalities that they're trying to avoid, which is part of the reason I think Darius Slay especially is gone. I think Akuda fits that system, that mold much better. And we also sign a lot of expatriates too. So clearly there's a lot of familiarity with that system.
I have Daron Harmon, Jamie Collins, Trey Flowers.
Amendola.
Yeah, Amendola, especially bringing Amendola back when I think that he hasn't been all that effective. I still think that for Matt Patricia, being his personal friend is good for the locker room and to instill his philosophies, so to speak. Do you guys like it this way? Getting all these former Patriots and doing this Patriots Junior type thing?
As long as they're performing on the field, I think it's definitely a good thing. And to speak to your Amendola note there, I would disagree with that. I think Amendola was really effective. He's not going to put up stats by any means, but he is a guy that's going to get you the clutch third down when you need it. That's kind of his role on the team. And he was extremely effective in that regard last year. He got injured like half the team did at the end of last year. So his stats are also a little down. And that's one of the knocks on him is that he can get injured. But One year, $4 million, you're going to take a guy like that every time on your roster.
That's a risk you're willing to take.
I mean, he still had 678 yards last year, so it wasn't
I think people are upset that he's not Golden Tate.
Yeah.
He's not going to be Golden Tate in that slot there.
Golden Tate did leave a lot to be desired whenever he leaves. You see the big play addition. Does Matt Patricia still have control of the locker room? We're not hitting the DEFCON 4 button.
I think he's gaining control of the locker room, really. I think he's been in a battle, like I said, casting out those bad eggs and really bringing in the guys that he can rely on, high-character guys, guys who are looking to just go to work every day and, you know, try to make this team great. So, yeah, I think he's finally there. And that's what part of what's been holding us back the last couple of years.
And Rudd Dog, you know, yeah, he has grown. In 2018, apparently he was a different guy than he was last year. 2018 was his first year as a head coach.
Yes.
And I think he tried to be somebody he really wasn't. And last year he kind of molded it more into just being himself. And you can see the stories from year one to year two dramatically different. Even the way he ran practice day to day. So he's learning as well. This is his third year of the job. So I when I was like an associate wherever I worked, I know I wasn't as good as I was the second year when I worked there. So everybody improves at their job.
It is weird. Like you saw, like when Patricia was with the Patriots, like all his players just absolutely loved him. Like he was a very affectionate guy. But then you hear all these stories about him just slamming dudes in practices
being
first
a disciplinarian
year.
And then trying to put down the iron foot.
I think right now he's trying to get the best of both worlds and also get the personnel that are trying to mold that system. And I think year three is where that hypothetically should come together on both ends of the ball.
So let's talk about Matt Stafford. We all agree that Matt Stafford is the franchise cornerstone quarterback for the Detroit Lions. He's not going anywhere. What does his future look like with the Detroit Lions? Are we going to see the big year extension at the end of this year? Or are we going to let him try to test the waters of free agency?
Well, I think that's going to hinge a little bit on, I mean, he's been finishing the last few seasons a bit beat up. So, I mean, my first instinct is, hell yeah, sign this guy. To get better than him, I mean, is highly unlikely. Unless we tank totally this year and go for that kid from Clemson. But
Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence. But, I mean, even then, I'm not sure he's going to be as good as Stafford for a while. Stafford is still the beating heart of this team, and it kind of goes as he goes. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
I know the wife has come out and said, we like being in Detroit. Please let us stay in Detroit. This is our city. We like being here. Off the top of my head, I would assume, kind of like you, I don't think you can get much better than Matt Stafford unless you'd make a dramatic change like tanking or backing the Brinks truck up to some free agent store. And even then, it's Matt Stafford knows this system. Matt Stafford is comfortable here. If it wasn't for the injuries, he would be a fixture here. So I agree with you guys. I would re-sign Matt Stafford at least for one more contract, let him play it out. You added a lot of guys in free agency. I think you guys had a really good offseason. Halapula Vitali on the on offensive tackle, 5 years, $45 million. Jamie Collins, linebacker, 3 years, $30 million. Nick Williams from the Bears, I think, is a really good pickup. Chase Daniel to play backup quarterback. Desmond Trufant at cornerback, one of my Falcons. Reggie Ragland, Daryl Roberts, Geronimo Allison, Daron Harmon. Who is your favorite free agent that you guys brought in?
Well, I'll just want to go first. I think a lot of us agree that Jamie Collins is probably our favorite. But before we speak, I'll let Connor and Rudd Dog speak about him. But the most controversial one was Big V. I just want to talk about that really quick because on the surface it says 4 years, $45 million, or 5 years, $45 million. But it's really a 2-year contract. All the guarantees are up front. The criticism is just like this guy was the backup tackle on the Eagles, but he played a starter's amount of snaps really on there. And he was one of the highest graded run blockers, at least per PFF. Now, and his pass blocking measured with that of Rick Wagner, who we just cut. So the Lions are paying for upside and they can get out of it in 2 years. So it's a defensible contract, I think, for sure. And with the upside and what they're trying to establish on the ground in the run game, I think it's a justifiable contract, especially with the upside that he presents. He doesn't have a lot of miles on him.
Before we let Connor and Big Z speak, I think no matter what, if you spend money on the offensive line, I don't care if it's a little bit iffy. I think you have to throw money at the offensive line in this league. So I think it's a good take bringing in Big V.
Oh yeah. O-line, baby.
Connor, what about you? Who are you most excited about?
I really like the Jamie Collins signing, but I actually really think Trufant is maybe a slept on signing. He's not particularly flashy and I know he's getting on the wrong side of 30 here, but I think he's just a really solid player with high intelligence.
My
good
biggest
skills.
Thing about Trufant, being a Falcons fan, I've seen a lot of Trufant in the past, I think 6-7 years. I think we've signed him to 2 contracts. Mm-hmm. Trufant is a very good cover corner. He can match up against guys. He has a nose for the football. He has, for him, probably below average turnover numbers, but league probably average turnover numbers. He's good at sniffing out fumbles and interceptions. My big thing with him is being able to stay on the field. He is a bit injury prone. And
I believe he played 9 games last season.
Yeah, and it was about the same from the year before. To pay him 2 years, $21 million is fine. It's a little bit on the expensive side, but it's fine for him. 2-year deal. If it doesn't work, cut him, eat the money, and bring somebody else.
Yeah.
Trufant is, I think, a good signing for you guys, losing Darius Slay. He's not going to replace Darius Slay, but he'll replace about 75% of his production for how much cheaper?
Yeah, well, I think we really replaced Slay in the draft with Okuda, and I think Trufant's going to be a great mentor to him and a great – maybe start out number one, probably develop into that number two when Okuda eventually takes over, because he's clearly our best defensive prospect right now.
Because even when Alford and Trufant were both in Atlanta, it was even Alford in that first cornerback slot. Trufant was more of a area zone coverage guy. Alford could match up with a man. Trufant's not so great at matching up with men. He's good at covering zones. I really like Trufant. I was kind of mad that we had moved on from Trufant, but I think that you guys got a really, really, really above average serviceable player in Desmond Trufant.
Good to hear.
All right, Big Z.
I think another underrated free agent sign that we had was Danny Shelton. Two years, $8 million, also an ex-Patriot. But the Lions desperately need help up the middle. Snacks Harrison was pretty much a blocking pad last year on the defensive line for us. And this is a guy that knows the system really well, being in New England for the last few years. And he's just going to – what the Lions want on their nose tackles especially is just to take up two blockers to free those linebackers to get a free tackle on the running back. The Lions need to stop the run first. That was where a lot of their issues – started last year on the defense, and then it expanded out to the pass game. But stopping the run was definitely a big issue for much of the season last year, and a lot of that had to do with the interior play and injuries. So, again, a guy like Danny Shelton that's durable on a cheap contract, I think, is an underrated signing for sure.
Now, Rudd Dog, before we get to you, I want you to speak on that Damon Snacks Harrison cut. I know a lot of people that don't follow Detroit are a little bit confused on why you would cut such a good player. But you were saying that last year was just almost so abysmal that there's almost nothing to say from that.
Oh, yeah. He was a wet towel out there. He was getting pushed around left and right. He was not the same player from a year before when he took our defense towards the tops of the league. And, he came out afterwards saying he didn't even want to be here, didn't want to be in Detroit from the beginning, and then I don't know what changed from year one to year two, but he was not playing well. So that's an addition by subtraction move, really. We're going to get someone younger and hungrier in there. We don't need some older proven diva who thinks he's all that and isn't going to put the effort in. And Shelton should be a nice replacement.
Who are you most excited about bringing in?
Oh, Jamie Collins. That's the premier signing for sure of this offseason, I would say. He's not a spring flower anymore, but the guy can still ball out. He still had 7 sacks last year in New England. He replaces Devon Kennard, who I know a lot of people were kind of confused by that move too, but if you watch the games, his 7 sacks, you realize those come in between major famine times. Like, if he's not winning the battle outright, he disappears from the game plan. Plus, he can't do anything coverage, and he's not great in the run either. So Jamie Collins will replace him, and he can also open up a lot more on our defense because he can move all around the linebacker positions to play the other positions too. So, I mean, this guy – and I know a lot of people bash it too because when he's not with the Patriots, he's not as good, and he went to the Browns and wasn't very good for them. Though he did have 100 tackles his last season with them, but it wasn't the big signing they thought it was going to be. But you know, like you said, we're like the baby Patriots. We run the similar schemes, and concepts, so I think he'll have a really good chance of being very productive here.
So we lose Graham Glasgow. How big is that?
It was bigger before the draft, I think, where we really focused on the line. I think they don't really – they're very comfortable with cheap rookie deals there. I think they're focusing spending money elsewhere. I was a little more concerned about it before the draft is what I'll say simply, but I think they have a plan.
Okay. We also lose J.D. McKissic, who was kind of depth in the running back game. He signs with the Redskins. Mike Daniels, D-tackle, someone that I thought would never leave Green Bay. How did Mike Daniels play last year?
Not much. Yeah, he just was injured most of the season. So when he was out there, you noticed the difference in his frat pass rush up the middle, but it wasn't very often. So it's really hard to knock him personally as a player or anything. Just was injured.
Yeah. We also lose Rashawn Melvin, Darius Slay, two of your starting cornerbacks from last year. But you've done all you can to replace those, bringing in Daryl Roberts, Desmond Trufant, and Jamie Collins. So, Daron Harmon and all the guys in the secondary.
Jeff Okuda
drafting him at number 3 overall. The last guy that you lost that I see that's notable is Sam Martin, one of the league's better punters. I know that we don't like to talk about punters a lot, but does the special teams unit take a hit by losing Sam Martin?
I'd like to say I was disappointed we did not draft Braden Mann. We all really wanted him in the later rounds, and I think we were all a little bit disappointed not to draft the top punter.
Yeah, we actually like talking about punters because Sam Martin has made it actually entertaining. He's a good player, and he's choked a few times in some clutch situations for us, but there's no doubt he impacted games with his abilities. Yeah. Not just as a punter, but as a kickoff guy, too.
Exactly.
What's the plan for the special teams unit? Are we going to go sign a big punter, or because the draft has already happened and you guys didn't?
They have a guy named Matt Fox, I believe, he was on their practice squad last year. It seems like they're going to be rolling with him. They also signed an undrafted free agent. Sapos, I believe, is his last name. I hope I'm pronouncing it right, that they have on there. They seem to be wanting to go cheap at punter this year, basically. Probably net around 40 yards a kick. I think the bigger thing about these two guys is they have a propensity not to kick it into the end zone for touchbacks. I think that's what they're really looking for rather than a big boomer leg. But they will miss Sam Martin on those kickoffs. He was perfecting the art of kicking it like right to the 5-yard line and getting a
with
lot of air
hang time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think Sam Martin was a top 4 punter in the NFL. I think the special teams unit is going to miss him. I think punters are more important, and you guys know this because you guys like talking about him. Punters are more important than people think, playing field position battles and pinning guys deep on defense. So let's talk about the draft. Number 3 overall, we take Jeff Okuda. Does anybody have any sort of objection to that?
Well, I think some people were upset we didn't trade back with Miami or the Chargers. I think that was something a lot of Detroit fans wanted. But looking at the market, it doesn't really seem like he got a solid offer. And it seems like Okuda was the guy from the beginning that they wanted. He checks all the boxes. I think most people in Detroit are pretty happy with the pick at number 3.
Yeah, I only have a minor objection. I think Isaiah Simmons was a better prospect, but it's too hard to complain about a top-notch safety or corner. I mean,
yeah, Jeff Okuda, I think, is really good. Do I think he is an elite talent? Not necessarily. I'm kind of with you guys. I think Isaiah Simmons is a little bit better of a talent just because of the versatility. But if you wanted someone just to play cornerback, Okuda is your guy.
I would disagree with that. I think Okuda, you know, you don't draft a cornerback at number 3 unless you think this guy's going to be truly elite. I mean, what is it, since 1997 a cornerback hasn't been drafted this high? Every scout pretty much agreed with the pick and the landing spot for Okuda. His stats are unbelievable in college. Never gave up more than 50 yards in a game. Even more impressive is that he never had a pass interference call against him in college, which is,
really?
Like, unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, the combination of those two things, I think, is really rare. PFF graded him as their highest-rated cornerback ever. And he hasn't been around that long, so, I mean, that's just one little extra stat to throw in there. But, I mean, he's got all the measurables and all the stats you want behind him. And Bob Quinn even said, this guy's going to be a starter day one right away.
Yeah,
so.
100%.
So I really think it was a good pick, and I think I think he's a future Hall of Famer. But I mean, that's a lot to say with the guy who hasn't played it down yet. But
yeah, the more interesting pick I thought was DeAndre Swift out of Georgia. I think it was a really good pick to pair him with Kerryon Johnson. Is going to be a really good running back room. I think DeAndre Swift cuts from left to right really well. CBS has it graded as a C+. What do you guys think about drafting DeAndre Swift?
Oh, man, I'm excited about this guy. I think he's going to add a dimension we haven't had in a while. I mean, we started to get glimpses of it with Kerryon, but then he gets injured. I think this guy's a little better put together than Kerryon, so he should hold up a little better just physically. Kerryon fell to us in the second round last year because he wasn't built like a prototypical running back. This guy is compact. He's short, but he's stocky. I think he's going to just – his lightning quick cuts are going to be awesome to watch, and I think he'll open up our offense big time.
Yeah, I love the pick myself. A lot of people had him as the top-rated running back in the draft. I think a very important thing to note is he does not have a lot of wear and tear on him from Georgia. They definitely did not overwork him. And
no, because Georgia had 8 running backs that will be drafted in the next 2 years.
Well, exactly. And I think this works perfectly to pair him with Kerryon Johnson, who has his own injury concerns. I just think he adds an element. We haven't had a running back in a long time. And clearly, Bob Quinn's getting really serious about developing that run game, which Darrell Bevell has struggled to do in Detroit so far.
Yeah, and I mean, Rod Dog mentioned on our podcast that DeAndre Swift, 6.6 yards per carry in college, the most ever for any Georgia running back. And Georgia has a deep history of running backs.
Yes, they do.
So I think that's really impressive. But another element about this guy that I think the Lions are really going to get, if you look at this guy's tape and the way Matt Stafford likes to operate in a two-minute drill, to get DeAndre Swift out there in a two-minute drill, this guy in the pass game, the way he can shake a linebacker, Stafford was most successful in his two-minute drills in his career when Theo Riddick was on the field. I think Stafford really missed that type of guy on the field late in the game. And this guy's going to fill that hole that I think was missing a lot since Theo Riddick's been off the roster.
And I'm sure Matt Stafford's going to love playing with another Georgia boy.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, they both wore number 7 for Georgia, too, so we're going to try and come up with some nickname for them.
7.7. So in the third round, you get Julian Okwara from Notre Dame, the edge rusher. CBS has it graded as an A-. What do y'all think?
I like it.
His brother is on the Lions, if you weren't aware, both the same position.
I actually saw ESPN put something out about that.
Yeah.
Now, brother,
he's
both play for the Lions.
Yeah, he's a little smaller and a little quicker than his brother. I think he'll add a nice element to our defense that we desperately needed.
Yeah, a little speed off the edge. We needed that. We had no real pass rusher besides Trey Flowers last year, and he's not a speed rusher. So it'll be nice to have a bit more of that component to our defensive line rotation.
Oh, yeah.
So in the third and fourth round, you talk about Bob Quinn addressing the offensive line through the draft instead of through free agency. Two guys with completely different grades, Jonah Jackson out of Ohio State in the third round, and then Logan Stenberg out of Kentucky in the second round. Jackson gets an A on CBS, but Stenberg gets a D+. Why are these guys graded so differently?
Well,
Oh, you can go, Big Z.
Yeah, Stenberg, I think the thing about him is this guy is just like all hard on the field. Bob on our podcast made the comparison to Richie Incognito, which I liked a lot, in terms of a guy that's going to play two and a little after the whistle, perhaps. You know, the guy's got the mentality, he's just going to go maul people, but that kind of leads to some bad technique and, unfortunately, a lot of penalties. This guy had 24 penalties the last 2 years in college, so... And I'm talking about Logan Stenberg. And Jonah Jackson, a lot more complete player, was a captain at Rutgers and then transferred to Ohio State, managed to work his way into the starting line in 1 year and arguably one of the top lines in the country. And he's, you know, he's not one of those elite testers by any means, but all his technique is sound by what all the scouts are saying. So I think that's why you're seeing the difference there.
Definitely more polished. So ready to come in day one, potentially start.
Do you think Jackson will start day one?
I think he's got a strong chance. The guys he's up against are, I mean, they're some proven backups, but we don't have a solid starter on the roster for that spot.
A lot of people are touting him as an early starter. And I think Stenberg, if they can work on his technique a little bit, his hand placement, and get the penalties down, like, that's the whole reason you have coaching, is to work those habits out of players like that. Clearly, Bob Quinn has trust in his coaches making this kind of move. And I think if Stenberg develops, they'll have two really solid players on offense here.
And I heard Stenberg did really well at the Senior Bowl as well. So I think I heard people had him climbing up their draft boards because they thought he kind of looked like he might. I already started to iron out some of his flaws in his game. So
yeah, and Patricia coached at the Senior Bowl and got a good look at a lot of these players, which I think a lot of people outside Detroit are not aware of.
It replaced the scouting circuit a little bit this year, because there's not a lot of chances to show off without this whole craziness going on.
Yeah. So in your last four draft picks, I really like what the Bears did, or the Detroit Lions did, getting a lot of draft picks in the third and fifth round. Kind of loading up in the middle because a lot of these guys go unnoticed in the middle of these rounds. But speaking on the late round guys like Quintez Cephas out of Wisconsin, wide receiver, Jason Huntley out of New Mexico State, John Panisi out of Utah, or Deshaun Cornell out of Ohio State. What do you think about these late round draft picks?
Some good solid potential there. I'm a big fan of the Cephas pick. I think personally this guy, I just have a feeling this guy is going to be good for us. I know I get made fun of on our podcast because I was such a big fan of this and made a bunch of comparisons to Hall of Famers who, whatever. I didn't make them myself. Other guys made those, and I was just repeating them. But, no, I just like how big and strong and athletic this guy is. Maybe he's not the fastest, but, I mean, even our guy Okuda, before they were future teammates, said he was the best player receiver he went against in college. So
not the fastest is an understatement. He had the slowest 40 time at the combine.
What do you mean? 4.73.
God.
TJ Lang's in love with this dude, though. He said he had a man crush on him, and Okuda said he was really hard to play against. So I guess there's some sort of potential. But
and he ran
I would have liked
People's
Jones there.
Ran a 4.56 at his pro day, so I think that was a fluke.
You always hear about guys that don't take the running seriously at the combine, so maybe that was one of the cases. He just kind of just showed up just to show up, and he had all his good stuff at his pro day.
The upside with Cephas is his deep ball ability and his ability to play at the slot. His deep ball ability especially, though, he has a big basketball background, can box out people in the air, and he's – if you see his highlight tape, he has a propensity to get his body in the right way to catch the ball where he's keeping the defender away from him and catches it with his hands out front, which is also key.
Former basketball player, used to boxing out. So
exactly.
Yeah, you know the wide receiver cores in today's NFL are starting to go more towards that big body basketball type guy. Because in the middle of the field and on jump balls, you do need to box people out and kind of play position with your thighs and win that football instead of just going up to catch it.
Yeah. And then the rest of this draft, I mean, two D linemen at the end, nothing major with those guys. Maybe they'll make the roster, maybe they won't. And then Huntley, the guy in New Mexico State, the running back, possible kick returner to challenge the ball, Agnew.
So anyone that knows anything about Jason Huntley, I know I don't. CBS gave him a D+, y'all's lowest graded draft prospect. What's the deal with the low grade?
I think it's because we have so many running backs and we already spent a second round pick on a running back. Doesn't seem like there's much room for this guy on the roster.
Unless it's with kick returns or special team stuff.
Kick return is really where it's going to be, and I just don't know if kick return was a really big need for the Lions. I was pretty content with Jamal Agnew in that spot. Especially later in the season.
Well, Agnew did struggle as a kick returner, but he was a really good punt returner last year, so I think he could compete for the kick returner spot. Yeah. I actually see this guy with his speed dimension could be a nice little package guy for the offense. You put him in on certain packages to be a threat to stretch the field, speed, get him some screens as a rookie. But maybe not nothing, you know, major, just – but with that speed, and he also, they do an adjusted break tackle stat where they take the players at lower levels of college football and they adjust them for the quality of talent to their amount of broke tackles, and he was by far the highest broken tackle at like 98%, and the next highest was the dude, what's his, Etienne from Clemson's. Yeah, so I mean, I like that elusiveness, and I mean, he's a little smaller, but he's real fast. I think he could be a potential impact guy in the future.
So as a whole with the draft, Connor, what is your grade for the Lions draft?
I said this on our pod, we did a grade. I gave this draft an A-. I always weigh the earlier rounds heavier, and I really liked our first three rounds. And I really liked the addressing of the O-line. I thought a lot of people thought we'd go more pass rush. But, you know, that's what we're relying on free agency for, and that's why we signed Jamie Collins and those kind of players. I thought we addressed some really big needs here, and I'm really excited for the potential starters we got out of this one.
Red Dog, what about you?
Yeah, I gave it a B+. There's a few things I might have done differently. I thought, like I said earlier, Isaiah Simmons and a few players later that I'm not so sure about, like Penasini. But overall, I like what we addressed. Got some really good players. I think it made our team better, so that's what's really important.
Big Z.
Yeah, I'm going to go B+ as well. I really like what the Lions did early on in the draft with Okudah and Swift getting two of the top players at two very important positions on the field. I think it's rare. You don't always walk away the two best players in a draft at two different positions. And then Aquara and Jackson, I thought, were excellent value as well. The second part of the draft, debatable. That's what makes me drop down. Just because there was other needs I thought we could address, maybe trading up for Zach Bond. Donovan Peoples-Jones was available late in the rounds. As Connor mentioned, Braden Mann, the punter, was there that I thought we could have maybe grabbed instead of some of these other guys. So I'm going to go B+ just because of how good they did in the first three rounds.
When you factor in the offseason signings as well, what do you give the offseason grade?
I'm going to give it an A-, mainly because I don't feel like we substantially addressed our interior defensive line. We got a decent-looking guy from the Bears who put up, like seven sacks or something like that last year as a D-tackle, which is good, but before that hadn't really been – done anything.
And he was kind of a rotational guy, so that's good. That's good.
Yeah, it is good. I think he's a good ad. But he's ready to start, just like Big V. And then Danny Shelton. Neither of them stand out as, you know, necessarily massive upgrades. But, you know, I think if we would have just maybe got a bigger name at D-tackle. But besides that, I think Jamie Collins, Trufant, I think we'd added a lot of good talent. And then the draft. So.
Connor?
Yeah, we didn't get a lot of like big sexy names this offseason, but I think we just had a good, quiet, steady offseason. Like we said earlier, got rid of some of those maybe more toxic personalities and replaced them with players that are going to fit Patricia's style and scheme. I think this is the year we're really going to see if this is a scheme issue for Patricia or a personnel issue, because, you know, he's running out of excuses. He's got his guys in there. Just for achieving the vision, I'm going to give this one an A-. I would have liked to see another D tackle in there, but I guess it still could happen. But yeah, I think overall pretty solid offseason for the Lions.
Big Z.
Yeah, I'm going to give a B right now just because of those issues up front on the defensive line. I still think there needs to be something done on the inside. I hope there's a bigger move coming. Because, I mean, last year, I don't know if we talked about it at length here, but the Lions, easily the worst pass rush in the NFL. If you look at the stats of time allotted for the quarterback to throw compared to the rest of the NFL, it's not even close. Like, on average, I think the Lions were like half a second longer the second worst team. I mean,
a half a second equals one progression. If you give a quarterback a half more second, you give them one more progression to make another throw.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that was that would be good news if we just gave one more progression the way the Lions were rushing the passer last year.
Yeah.
They got rid of a guy like Devin Kennard who only got a sack, you know, if the defensive backs are holding up for like 4 seconds in the back end. So I thought that was a good move. But I think that starts with the pressure up the middle. And I don't know if the Lions have that guy, Deshaun Hand, if he's healthy, but he has not been reliable, unfortunately, the last 2 years. So I think the Lions still have some work to do. That's why I can give it a B, because I still don't think they've completely fixed the issues up the middle on the defense, especially in terms of pass rush.
So we are all in agreement that going forward, post-draft, pre-end of free agency, the biggest position of need is D-line.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
It was going into the offseason, and it's still fairly big, especially interior D-line.
Yeah, interior D-line, I think, should be the main focus. I think we've got some edge rushers.
I have right here that before the draft, the Lions had about $29 million in free agency money. Do you guys know anything developing on that? Like how much money you guys have after the draft, or?
I think we still got some money to swing around with. I don't have the exact number off the top of my head. But
it was 29 before you signed the draft class and before you do anything with in-house stuff.
Yeah, the Bob Quinn usually likes to leave $15, $18 million in cap space.
Which is a higher on the average for NFL team.
Yeah, but, I mean, doing that allowed us to get, like, Snacks 2 years ago, which really helped because of his big contract. So it allows for a big move like that. He likes to leave some flexibility during the season for a move like that to address an injury or something like that. So he's definitely been consistent in regards to how much money is remaining on the salary cap going into the season.
Yeah,
and there's also extensions that we have coming up for Taylor Decker and Galladay as well that we need to factor in for that salary cap.
Well, you talked about the Patriot way earlier and if we like it, and that's one big thing Bob Quinn has done is just roster management as far as the cap management. He has been very good at that since he's been with us, so I like that.
All right, so let's look at a few home and away opponents. We do not have the schedule yet, but we do have who you're going to play. At home, you're going to have your three division games, Chicago, Green Bay, Minnesota, and then you host New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Houston, Indy, and Washington. So a decently tough home schedule.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tom Brady coming to Detroit. He's screwed again. The last time he came here, we destroyed him. It's going to happen again. Can't wait for that one.
Patricia's got them all figured out. We don't have to worry about Tampa.
Yeah, he knows the formula. So on the road, you got your three division games at Chicago, at Green Bay, at Minnesota. Going to Arizona, coming to my hometown, Atlanta. Going to Carolina, going to Jacksonville, going to Tennessee. So as a whole, the schedule is on the tougher end for the Detroit Lions this year.
I think that's fair to say.
I like it.
Yeah, it's always going to be tough, though. And it's funny how we're always playing the Arizona Cardinals in Arizona. It's like an annual tradition at this point. We have Cardinals fans that are part of my family, and it's amazing how the Lions play them every year. It's kind of crazy.
So, but what do you guys think that the Detroit Lions record will be in 2020? I have written down 7-9.
Oh,
no, that's not enough.
It's
going to be more like, I think it's going to be like 12-4.
Thing you have to understand about our podcast, Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid, is Detroit media is inherently very negative. Obviously, the Lions don't have a lot of historic playoff success. If you ever listen to Detroit radio, like 97.1, 11:30 a.m., they're very pessimistic. And what we try to offer is a more optimistic fan-based view of the team. So we generally are pretty optimistic about our predictions. Obviously, it didn't work out for us last year if you listen to our podcast. But I really think they're going to be a better team this year. I really think the scheme is going to come together. I'm going to say 10-6, they're going to sneak into a wild card spot.
And with this roster, you absolutely have reason to be optimistic. I think that you guys had a really good offseason, not even talking about the draft. The draft was really good, but even the offseason was really good. You guys want to hang your hat on the fact that you didn't address the D-line, which is true, but I think that the guys that you brought in are really, really, really serviceable and good, and they can plug holes almost in day one.
I'd agree with that.
So,
Red Dog, what's your prediction, man?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I said it was 12-4. I think with Stafford staying healthy, we address the O-line. He'll get, and we'll have a running game this year. So I think our offense could be potentially just lights out. And I think our defense, we just got a new defensive coordinator, which I would say was our biggest change of the offseason and the most important because what's his name?
Corey Undlin.
Yep.
Yeah, no, the guy last year,
Paul Pasqualoni.
Pasqualoni was not, he was ill-fit for the NFL, making a jump from the college game just because he knew Patricia. He was terrible and called a terrible defense last year. I think a basic high school coach could have called a better defense, and I think just having a better scheme alone will take us closer to the middle of the pack. Then you add the talent we got, we should be. I think not necessarily top third or of the league, but top half of the league. So I think the combination of that will make us very good. And like Big Z mentioned earlier, we lost most of our games by one score, and I see that flipping this year.
So any sort of quality control can swing about half of those games into your favor.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like our first 11 games of the year, we had a lead at one point, I think. So better defense would go light years towards winning.
Yeah, I think at that point, the only other teams that had that many leads that consecutively were the Chiefs and the 49ers. So
right.
The Lions were up there and they just couldn't finish the goddamn game. So I have them going 10-6 personally, at least in my way too early prediction here.
Yeah, the way too early season prediction for 2020. So last question, I've been asking every team this. Scrap the record, scrap playoffs, scrap whatever you want to scrap. Why will the Detroit Lions be must-see TV this year?
Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford, he's the big draw every year. He's the guy that makes this team run, and he's so fun to watch sling the rock.
Yeah, I mean, he had top five numbers before he got hurt. I think if he plays really well and the Lions make the playoffs, you could see at least maybe outside MVP conversations with him. And especially if the run game gets going, good God, this is going to be a beautiful offense to watch.
Oh, yeah. And is the Super Bowl a must-see TV? Because that's where I see the Lions.
Ooh, yeah. There we go. I like it.
So I think that's why, but Rudd Dog definitely hit the nail on the head. Stafford, I mean, the Lions will play enough national games to get the true appreciation for how good this guy is. Go back and watch his highlights last year. This guy was on fire until he got injured. Look at his one touchdown throw against the Kansas City Chiefs where I still don't know how it looked like the ball disappeared at one point between four defenders into the end zone. To Kenny Galladay in the back part of the middle end zone. I don't know which touchdown of the game it was off the top of my head, but my God, this guy can fit it into a throwing lane unlike anybody else in the NFL, in my opinion, besides maybe Patrick Mahomes. But I think Stafford's on a league of his own in some regard.
So I remember the last time that my Atlanta Falcons played the Detroit Lions. I'm not sure if you guys remember this game, and it goes right
London.
In what we're saying. No, it wasn't London. And
no, that was the goal line thing, wasn't
the,
it?
The goal line.
Oh, second yeah.
So talk
about a game-changing play.
It goes right into what you're saying, dude. Like, the Lions, they're just so unlucky. Like, you put yourself in the game, you make the right tackles, and then there's just a weird formality rule that costs you the game.
That wound's still open, and you just sprinkle a little salt in it, so thanks.
Salt Bay right there.
Oh, God. That was killer.
The NFL has never addressed that rule. Like, there was 8 seconds left on the clock when his knee hit the ground. We've seen the Lions get up to the line and run a play in under 8 seconds mm-hmm. before. We've seen it. I've seen other teams do it. So the Lions get gypped because the refs made a bad call. I hate that rule. I can't believe they haven't
It's a dumb rule.
It's unbelievable.
10 seconds is a lot. I would like to see it go down to 8 or 7 seconds, which is you can't really say this word for football, but that's industry standard for football. It's about 8 or 9 seconds is when you should, in that hurry up, kind of get back to the line and spike the ball or run another play.
I understand why they have the rule. I don't understand why it has to apply when the ref makes an incorrect call on it, like a touchdown score. Like, there should be some caveats to it as well.
Right. Yeah. They called it right, they would have got the ball again. Yeah.
The Lions are the kings of getting rules changed after they get screwed by them already. I think it's happened like at least 3 times in the last 2 years. Unbelievable.
Well, fellas, whenever you guys come to Atlanta and play the Falcons this year, I want you guys to have me on. I'll talk some shit. I'll get a little bit more biased than I have been in this episode. But thank you guys for coming on. This has been a really good season preview for the Lions. I feel like I live in Detroit now after talking to you guys. Before we go, Connor, plug yourself. Tell us where to find you at.
You can find me on Twitter at Connor_Ruddy. My Instagram is Connor Ruddy. We also have an Instagram account. For our podcast, I think it's Drinking Lions.
No, at Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid.
At Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid. Our Twitter is Drinking Lions.
Correct.
So give us a shout out there. We'd obviously love to have you on the pod when we play the Falcons, too.
Please do. Rudd Dog, plug yourself.
Well, obviously drinking the blue Kool-Aid, but I also have on Instagram at the Singing Swordsman. So check that out. And that's it for me.
Big Z, what you got?
Yeah, so, I mean, just a recap on our podcast, Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid, a Detroit Lions podcast. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. My personal Twitter account's at Big Z Podcast, also on my own, and then at The Pylon as well, another NFC North podcast that I run on the side as well.
I actually had somebody from that DM me back about doing one team. I think you guys are doing one of the teams, the other guys who run that.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I mean, we had the whole NFC North. So
Yes. So guys, thank you so much for coming on. That was a really good episode. I feel really good. We kept it right in the time constraints that I wanted. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find me on Instagram, Cohen_Hughes. I don't do Twitter, too many negative opinions. The podcast page is on Twitter, though, at TDBpod. Same thing for Instagram. You can find me on Facebook, Cohen Hughes, Cohen Hughes. You can also join the Daily Degenerate Sports Shit Talk page, private group page on Instagram. I think we got like 1,600 people in it. So if you're into memes and sports and arguing and shit like that, hit me up and I'll add you to that. Guys and girls, this has been episode number 8 of the 32 Teams in 32 Episodes podcast series, Detroit Lions edition. Guys and girls, thank you so much for listening. Like, subscribe, rate, millennial things, whatever the hell you do with the button. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.